Welcome back to the second half of this special movie soundtrack music broadcast of Celluloid Dreams. Larry Jackie Betts is our sound designer and engineer, Peter Canavesi, our film critic, and yours truly, Tim Sika, the host. The music is by John Williams, the world premiere of Jeremy's theme, specifically contributed to Superman IV, which was also overseen by Alexander Courage. This music is part of the 8-CD set of music from all four of the Superman films, which we've been talking about all evening here, starring Christopher Reeve, and composed by John Williams, and it's appropriately entitled Superman the Music, 1978 to 1988, much of it released for the very first time, and to which we are dedicating our entire broadcast this evening. Mike Matacino is back. You know, Mike, it's the rumor is that you've taken up residence in the KSJS lounge. You've been on the show so much here in the last month
or
so.
Well, it's been very cool for me to have been able to spend so much time up here and get out of L.A. for a little bit. And it's been far too long since I've been up in the area, and I'm loving it.
Well, it's good, of course, to have you on the show. And last time you were on, we talked about Superman the Music, the 8-disc set that you produced of the Superman music. But we didn't get an opportunity because of time to talk about Superman 4, which is part of this set from Film Score Monthly. And I didn't even know that there's never really been a soundtrack issued for Superman 4, correct?
None at all, although we did find that one was planned and then aborted.
And why was that?
Well, it's a long story if you're still listening and the title Superman 4 hasn't sent you changing the dial. It was a very troubled production that came out in 1987. The rights to the Superman film series had been purchased from Ilya Salkind and his father, who had produced the first three films, purchased by the Cannon Group, which was like a mini major in the mid 80s, who went on an incredible run of doing lots and lots and lots of films. And they purchased the Superman rights, attracted Christopher Reeve back to reprise the role after he said he wouldn't. And Christopher Reeve was involved in developing the story and drew the rest of the cast back. And it really began as an attempt to bring the series back to the quality of the original. What happened then was that through the pre-production period, the bottom fell out from the Cannon phenomenon. And there were a lot of poor decisions, business decisions made, and skyrocketing production costs. And so they ended up starting filming with the budget cut in half, basically. So all of the production value was lost, and the special effects were not as accomplished as one would hope for. It felt very rushed and flimsy, and a cut was previewed and completed at about 2 hours or so in length in Orange County, California, and the results were disastrous. And Warner Brothers seized control of it for the U.S. release and oversaw the cutting of about 30 minutes. So what ended up in theaters in July of 1987 was 89 minutes of a movie that didn't quite work. You'll remember this is the one where Superman battles a Lex Luthor-created villain called Nuclear Man. And it came and went and was not the greatest end of the Christopher Reeve saga that it really started out, you know, with the intention of being.
I remember being so disappointed when I saw it because I had high hopes for it too. I thought it was going to be a return to the, you know, one and two, and have that similar kind of tone. But I also couldn't even remember much of the music. So listening to this CD in this set, and it's 110 minutes.
2 hours of orchestral music. Plus we have
it's a revelation, and it's Alexander Courage, right?
Right. Well, what happened was that John Williams once again was not available. He was still conducting the Boston Pops Orchestra at this time, and the Cannon guys called him, and they really wanted him to do it. But he said, I'm not available, but he recommended Alexander Courage, his colleague of many, many years and close friend, to actually come in at the age of 65, I might add, and completely arrange and score this movie. And Williams also agreed to contribute new thematic material, which Courage could then also tap and intermix with a lot of all of those existing themes that Williams wrote in 1978 for the first Superman. So he and Sandy met. We say Sandy was the nickname for Alexander Courage. They met...
I don't know how they determined that, but whatever.
Alexander.
Alexander.
So, Sandy.
Okay. Sandy.
So, yeah. Sandy and Williams met at MGM in the late 50s, I think, on Funny Face, where Williams was the pianist.
Oh.
Then they both both went into television. They both wrote for Lost in Space. They both worked at Revue Studios, which was the television arm of MCA, the parent company of Universal then. And then they both did orchestrations for Williams's supervising of the movie version of Fiddler on the Roof in 1971, that for which he got his first Oscar.
Yeah, in the great adaptation of music, by the way.
Yes, fantastic. Yeah, one of my favorites.
Brilliant, yeah.
And in the meantime, Sandy had become famous for writing the theme to Star Trek. So then later on, Courage, who was just one of the greatest orchestrators ever, really, worked on a lot of Williams projects. And so that was who Williams turned to when Superman IV came up. And Sandy took it on and was able to bring his incredible knowledge of Williams' style and his own gifts for orchestrating into what was really one of his biggest efforts. And that's what made it so sad. It was a huge undertaking, a great accomplishment. And as I said, he was 65 at the time. It was started out really as almost like it would have been the crowning achievement of his career, and that it sort of really disappeared without even a notice was very, very sad. So that's one of the many reasons why I'm so thrilled to have been involved in getting it finally out there.
It's funny because when you said he wished it to be the crowning achievement, or it should have been, you don't get any of that when you watch the movie. When you listen to this CD, you can make a good case for this being his sort of, you know, some of the best work he's ever done. And I liked it because it was very evocative of John Williams, but yet at the same time, it didn't even sound like John Williams, and yet it was very respectful to John Williams. And I think the way he played the Superman theme at different times during the score were thrilling.
Well, you know, sequels are always a problem. I forget which filmmaker said it, but somebody boiled it down to a very simple thing. The problem with sequels is that people want the same movie, but they want a different movie. So the same thing is really true with a score. And what I loved about Superman IV is that you got that. You got something that reminded you of the original, but it also was different. You weren't listening to the same score over. And I mentioned when we had the interview about Ken Thorne's work on Superman 2 and 3, how he did his part in honoring the original. Courage did the same thing. But to answer your original question, yeah, this movie opened at 89 minutes. So 45 minutes of the music was gone, I think, approximately. And that was part of the reason why no soundtrack album happened at the time. One was planned. There was also another composer, Paul Fishman, whose father was the music advisor for the Canon Film Company. He was commissioned to write some 80s techno pop to go in with some of the scenes in Superman IV. And most of those scenes ended up being cut. So you had this album prepared, which had 5 songs on it and a bunch of Sandy's orchestral music. And it seemed that most of those ended up being for scenes that got cut. Most of the songs were cut. So you ended up with an album for a movie that didn't have any of that music in it. So they decided to just abort it. And it wasn't until we did this project that we discovered this album master and what the track listing was for it. So it's just very interesting how all of this works, but we're in an age now where we could put the whole thing together. So we ended up filling 2 CDs worth of Superman IV. And my effort into it was, and into writing the notes that go along with it, was to really give you a window into what this movie really could have been.
Maybe what it should have been.
And what it should have been. Sure. And maybe come up with a different sense of it after you're through listening to it, because you can listen to the music and in your mind see a different movie. See the movie that Courage was scoring, see the movie that Sid Fury was directing. And of course, in your imagination, the special effects are always perfect.
Yeah, I think you succeeded. We're talking to Mike Matesino, album producer of Superman the Music, 1978 to 1988. This is the 8-disc set that is currently available through Film Score Monthly. And we're talking specifically today about Superman IV, which Williams did write. He wound up writing 3 themes for this that are on this recording.
Right. And we'd hoped that that would come as a pleasant surprise to soundtrack listeners.
It was to me.
They've always said that there were two themes, and I don't know exactly where that came from. Maybe an Alexander Courage interview or somebody's interview, or based on just assessing that short 89-minute version of the film. So the three new themes basically attached to three characters in the film. One was the character of Nuclear Man, who was the main nemesis in the story that Superman battled. And then there was Lacey's theme. Lacey is played by Marielle Hemingway in the film, and she's the daughter of the tycoon who takes over the Daily Planet. And those two themes are discernible in the short version of the movie, although you can't hear them very well. What you hear when you finally have the music on its own, for Lacey's theme anyway, is a fantastic, sultry, jazzy kind of melody that really could come from any of Johnny Williams's comedies in the 60s. Mm-hmm. But it's incredibly hypnotic in its own way and has some fantastic saxophone lines in it for the main theme.
When I first heard it, I thought of Catch Me If You Can. It was sort of like a foreshadow. I think you even say that in the notes, didn't you? You say that
in the
notes? Yeah,
I think I did. And so it's like it at the same time evokes the 60s Williams and the 90s Williams. And in the mid 80s, this was a transition in Williams's career. Because, you know, the Star Wars trilogy was finished. The prequels were going to be many years later. Spielberg was going on to a different kind of film, looking for more dramatic projects. So this was kind of an interim era. But Superman IV, to me, kind of fills that gap. You can now follow the line of that transition because you can now connect, say, something like E.T. to something like Hook. Superman IV sort of fits in the middle of that, and it sounds like it comes between the two of them. And then you have the third theme, which was the big surprise, which was Jeremy's theme, the theme for the little boy who writes Superman a letter asking him to get rid of all the nuclear weapons. That sounds very much like Hook, or prefigures that. Or looking back, you know, it reminds you of E.T. It's a really classic.
It reminded me of Empire of the Sun. The scene where Jamie is running through the camp, the rhythms and some of the orchestration sounded like that to me.
I didn't even think of that. But you're absolutely right. So again, it fits right in where it should.
Yes.
In terms of those of us who know the track of John Williams's compositions over the years, will listen to this and know that it's mid-80s. So it was a great surprise for me to find it, because if you listen to the movie, if you know it's there, you can detect a few seconds of that melody. But you don't really get a sense of it, because a lot of the scenes that included it were among the ones that were cut. The DVD of Superman IV that came out in late 2006 had a lot of those cut scenes on it, but it was from a work print that survived before this music was included in it.
Yeah, but I don't want to digress on that. That you're right, but since you brought it up, the scenes with Nuclear Man, the first Nuclear Man, what did they score that with on the DVD? It was a weird kind of
Mr. Softy meets the Teletubbies. You mean that thing?
Mr. Softy meets the Teletubbies is a good description.
Yeah,
what is that?
I have no idea where that was tempted. I mean, if we could hunt down the editor of the movie, John Shirley, he might be able to tell us what that is. But I think
I think that's more whacked out than number three was.
All that was meant to do, I think, was to just somehow indicate that this scene was with him were supposed to be humorous and funny, but they were all scored. That's the thing, is that now these scenes all match up. I was very shocked, because that was a question of, well, were those scored or not? And we found that the entire movie was scored.
You can actually tempt the music on this disc to the,
yes,
to
you
those
can.
Scenes.
The music and actually fits.
It completely changes the character of the scene too.
Mm-hmm, it does. It doesn't necessarily make the scenes better, but it shows you what fine work Courage did in composing for them, for the maximum effectiveness. He did his job. That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
So now I think with the two, you really have a sense of what the long version of the film would have been like.
Alexander Courage also wrote a really neat Soviet march theme for Superman IV, which you've included on this album.
Mm-hmm. Courage did include a minor mode march representing the Russians in the film as part of the score. And an example of where all of these things come together is in the track called United Nations / Netman, where Superman goes into the United Nations and addresses the delegates and lets everybody know that he's going to rid the world of nuclear weapons. There's a moment there, as that scene climaxes, where the Superman theme, the love theme that goes with Lois, Jeremy's theme, and Lacey's theme all play at the same time. That's the crowning moment right there that shows what a genius Courage is and what he brought to this. It then goes into this action scene that shows Superman getting rid of the nuclear weapons, putting them into his huge net outer space and hurling it into the sun. And in there, as in the middle of Williams' Superman theme, Courage interpolates his own Russian theme for the appropriate scenes in that long sequence. So that's probably one of my favorite tracks in this score.
Another interesting thing about the set, too, and we can include Superman 4 with this, is I hadn't realized how John Williams, Ken Thorne, Alexander Courage here, and when they composed music, a lot of it was just source music, which meant that it was just supposed to be either in the background or whatever, but not something that you would really be paying attention to or that would, you know, dramatically or comedically underscore a scene. And I was astonished at the quality of that, what you would think would be just throwaway music. I want to talk about the sound in a bit here, but the composition, you would think that they wouldn't have put as much care into it.
Well, they did, but you see, that's one of the things that's not often talked about with film composers, is that they need to know every era of music. I'm not sure, we probably didn't go into this when I was on the show talking about Goodbye, Mr. Chips, but there was a call on that score, which Williams supervised, for some 1920s style source music.
Right. And it was Williams, party music or something,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, Williams called up the MGM music department and asked for something that wasn't really recognizable, but something from that era, something that they owned, and he couldn't find anything that really fit the bill, and the guy just said, why don't you write it yourself? And so he did. So, I mean,
it's really good.
Yeah, to somebody raised in the 30s and 40s and writing that particular score in the 60s, he's got to write something from the 1920s. No problem. You just sit down and you write it. So that's the kind of thing that a film composer has to do. He has to write music for a cantina in Star Wars. I mean, you know, so, okay, well, one's a jitterbug, really, and one's a Charleston. If you really listen to the two cantina music tracks from Star Wars, that's what they are. They're tweaked and made otherworldly, but that's really what they are.
Hmm.
So you just have to know it. So Ken Thorne has to write some rock and roll piece for a jukebox in a diner. You sit down and you do it. Sandy has to have troops parading through Red Square. He just did it. This is what these guys do. They're all geniuses. Mm-hmm. They just inherently and instinctively know, you know, every era, every form, every idiom. And if they don't know it, they go and they research it just like anybody else does.
How did you get this Superman 4 score to sound so great?
Well, it was the big unknown. We just didn't know what existed at all. And Warner Brothers had basically as a lead up to that big DVD set that they put out, as I understand it, they had a clearinghouse for all the elements because things were scattered all over, mostly in England. But they brought everything over. And of course, to do the Superman 2 Richard Donner cut, you needed somebody to catalog a lot of material, a lot of elements, figure out what they all were, and get them to a point where they were organized and you knew what you were working with. So somewhere among all this material were the original first generation 2-inch 24-track recording masters for Superman 4. So it was a square one remix and restoration, but they were in fantastic shape. So you are hearing it right off of the tape on which it was recorded. The challenge was not so much in restoration this time around, but in figuring out what everything was, because it was a score for a version of the movie that didn't exist. So there was that, and there was also the fact that the score was partly recorded in Germany with one orchestra and one mic setup and one recording engineer, and then shifted to England with a different microphone setup and different engineer and different orchestra. And to assemble the score meant going back and forth from one to the other quite often. and sonically to make that all blend. You can hide it behind sound effects in a film, but to have the music there just naked on its own, it just took a lot of work, and for me to be satisfied that it was seamless enough to my ear.
When you do this work, do you yourself have to do a lot of digging, or does it depend on the project?
I've done my share of digging, but in the case of Superman 4 specifically, it was a matter of going to Warner Brothers, getting the tracks on my hard drive, and working with it in my studio. But then for the writing, of course, you have to do a lot of research. And, I went and dug up what I could on this. The Academy Library is always a very handy resource to have available. And, you just have to expose yourself to what documentation you can find, and then just kind of literally ingest it all.
Was the score a revelation or a discovery, particular discovery for you as you were working on it?
Absolutely. I just was astonished at how good it was, and I saw in my mind a different movie. And to me, it just illuminated the power of music, because the music dictates what you envision, so that I now think of Superman 4 differently. Now I think of it as the movie that the music puts in my head, rather than what actually
what's up there on the screen
being produced, which was disappointing to everyone involved. I should also point out about Sandy personally. He is not in the greatest health right now. He is in a home, but he is still with us. And his daughter Renata very graciously became a point person for me on this and helped out considerably with giving me details about the recording and exactly when they went to England, when they went to Germany, what was done where, and hunting down some personal documentation from her parents' house that gave us information as well. It was very funny, because this is a really good story. Sandy kept a journal of every score he ever worked on, and would write the dates that he started, the dates that he finished, write down every cue, time it out. And part of the purpose of timing out the cues was calculating his payment. But anytime anything was recorded in England, it would say, "See London book." And there was no London book to be found. So I went with Renata to the Courage House up in the Malibu Hills, and she let me work with her to look through the guy's personal stuff, which was a very eerie experience. But I actually found the London book, and there it was. There were cue titles that I needed. There were dates that I needed, and there it was. But it was very funny to look at his main book, because at the very end of it, in the year 2002, the last thing in it said something like, 10 a.m., call Jerry, referring to Jerry Goldsmith, the composer. And then at the bottom it said, retire. And that's the ending of the book.
Really?
So that's how thorough he was in keeping track of all of his projects. Really terrific, amazing guy.
What were some of the challenges that you had to face in putting together a project like Superman 4?
One of the challenges on this was that people were very hard to find. Unlike Superman, the movie, the first one, where everybody was available, on Superman 4, it was hard to get to people. Sid Fury will not discuss this film. Very sad situation. He's still working, directing independent films, but it was very unfortunate that this really pretty much destroyed his career, at least as working for studios, even though in my assessment, it was not his fault at all. He started budgeting and preparing a $40 million production. And literally, as they all arrived in England to start shooting, was when this budget was cut to $17 million. So he had to scramble on a TV budget, on a rush schedule, working with an inexperienced crew to just get this thing done. And so there was no time to finesse performances, no time to think of what subtleties. It was just a matter of get the job done. You have to do work with what you're handed. And it really was not the ideal situation. You have Golan and Globus, who ran the Canon Group. They're back in Israel now. And, of course, Christopher Reeve is no longer with us, and he was very much involved in the story writing. He was one of the second unit directors. So it was not easy to find information on Superman IV. But the music really became more of a guide than it usually does for that reason. So when I heard it and had it all together, because, you know, I worked on it in all crazy order. I worked on it as it came in, basically. I worked first on the German reels and then on the England reels. And, you know, not until everything was mixed and restored did I hear it all put together in sequence and then had the same reaction you did, which was, wow, this actually tells a story. And I hear something, it creates in my mind, you know, the image of a movie that I haven't seen. And I mentioned before about the power of music. That's just, it just seemed to me to be a reason to be doing what I do, is that all these people work so hard on something and it doesn't always turn out the way we hope or want. Things happen. But in this case, we rescued the music, which has its own power. And I hope in a small way, I've validated the work that a lot of these people brought to this project, which is really an unhappy story, but I wanted to use the music to give it a happy ending. That's really how I approached it.
All righty. We've been talking about the score for Superman IV, composed by Alexander Courage. It's part of the 8-disc CD collection entitled Superman the Music, 1978 to 1988, available from Film Score Monthly. We've been talking to Mike Matesino, album producer of this incredible set of music. It's just sort of magnificent. I was going to say, Mike, you can go back home to L.A. now.
Do I have to?
Not if you want to. I don't think anybody knows you've taken up residence in the lounge. So
I'll go back and hopefully do some more great projects and then come on back.
Excellent. We'll look forward to it. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Tim.
You're welcome. I'm Tim Sika for Celluloid Dreams, 90.5 FM KSJS San Jose, and online at celluloiddreams.net. To win a copy of the 8-CD set of Superman the Music, please check out our website at celluloiddreams.net beginning this Friday, March 7th. For more information on Superman the Music, 1978 to 1988, please visit filmscoremonthly.com. Screen Scene, reviews of the new movies with Peter Canavesi, returns in its usual slot next Monday, March 10th.